Well, hey, Gundamaniacs, welcome to the Gundam Explained Show Live. I am your host, Adam Blue. Joining me, as always, Steven of Midnight Hatter in a new and different location. Is everything okay where you're at?
I can confirm that they are not. They're treating us well. I'm being well fed. Do not call the United Nations. I'm okay. I call this setup struggle streaming because, you know, obviously getting the floors done in my basement, this is where my desk would normally be. But, you know, there's a distinct absence of Gunpla and things around me. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's, you know, I do kind of like a little bit of a refresh to an office. And I tend to, it's funny because there's this mindset almost like where you want to set it, okay, this is going to be the best way to have my setup or your desk or whatever. And then over time you adjust or make micro adjustments. And then I've just now embraced where it's constantly in a state of flow. My setup, my desk, my office is never the way it's always going to be. I'm always going to be just making those little adjustments. And I do it all the time.
I do enjoy ever since you migrated from like the direct straight on webcam to the, you know,
oh yeah,
quarter view, which now I kind of have a similar layout here. I might keep this. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, I've always tried to figure out what is best, and I feel for some reason it comes off for me more natural to be like when I'm then focusing on something, I'm not looking like at the camera or like close, you know what I mean? It's almost like there's these little things that you act or you fake when you're making a video. And it's like, how much of that can I just remove and then make it more relaxing? You know?
Yeah. There's so many affectations of content creation where, you know, you'll see certain content creators where they've got like their mic on a boom arm and they do the whole like,
you know, Hey everyone. We're coming to you live again and I'm going to keep the microphone all up in my face.
Yeah.
We like to make it look as natural and conversational.
Oh, you know what? I think I lost you.
Oh, dude. Can you hear me? Am I back yet?
Uh-oh. Yeah, you got a little quieter.
Is it too quiet?
I think you have to hold it up to you now.
I went and ruined it for
or
myself.
Or maybe there's a gain switch on the mic, maybe?
Let's see. Anything better now?
Yeah, chat, let me know what you guys think. It seems to be lower for me. Yeah, it's almost like somehow the mic just stopped. Yeah, Nintendo did say stop the ASMR. I think that was an illegal move there. I think it's coming in just for some reason, like the game. Get down. One down. Oh, yeah, it's totally out. Totally gone. Yeah. Well, while you do that, I'll let you work on that. I've got some stuff to show off. So Steven's going to work on the mic issues. I ordered something that I had been contemplating for a while, also because it comes to Gunpla, you know, things get a little pricey. And this box is big, too. I'm going to have to actually just take off the top. It won't even fit on screen. It won't even fit. But this is, and I don't know what scale it's supposed to be exactly, but the Mechagodzilla Kiryu MFS 3. So I'm excited about building this because this is, I guess, another example of Gunpla has kind of got me feeling comfortable getting into more and doing more things. The Mechagodzilla is like a chrome, silver, gunmetal, whatever. And if you look at the runners here, you know, it's plastic and it's trying to give off that sort of silver-like color. But, you know, it just doesn't look good. So it's like, I would not like to have this as a model kit because the color of the silver doesn't look all that great. So I got the stuff I needed to get. It's a spray can, and I saw a video of a guy doing it where he sprays over the pieces first, cuts them, and I've got the Ray Studios chrome pens that I'm going to use to kind of clean that up. I think I talked about that before. But, you know, Steven, I am seeing some audio being picked up by your mic. But can't hear you talk. That's very strange. Anyway, so the other thing that's interesting about this... So there's like an inner frame to the Mechagodzilla, and it almost looks like fiber or weaved, you know, inner black sleeve or whatever. But what's going to be interesting is once I put that together, and I don't know if it's separate, it looks like it even comes with a whole bunch of pieces that are rubber. So the inner sleeve of the Mechagodzilla, is that rubber supposed to go over some joints, which I think would be pretty cool if that's the case. Steven, I mean, I've got so much content that
can
I
can hear me all right.
Whoa, okay.
Is
something
any,
happened just then?
Is that any better?
Okay. Yeah, talk real quick. Check.
Can you hear me now? Check.
What do you think? Because I can hear you better now.
No.
So, yeah, I can hear you better now. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, and you know what? It looks like. Okay. The camera froze for a second. It came back. What?
Oh.
But yeah, everyone's saying they can hear you. Excellent. Okay.
Cool.
No, but anyway, just real briefly, because I want to get your thoughts before we move on. I'm going to be painting this silver, like we talked about, this set, Kiryu.
Yeah.
I'm going to, you know, spray with chrome, and we talked about like some are undergated. You know, this isn't undergated. This is pretty much the side, which is fine. And then
you have the touch-up pen, right?
So you're So I have the touch-up pens. But the other thing I'm curious about is, I'm then going to want to go with the Tamiya ink, you know, to panel line. Would I just do it on top of the paint? Like I don't have to like treat it or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, typically you want to put like a gloss coat on it because that'll help get the ink to flow into those grooves.
Okay. I might want to do that because depending on the...
Your base paint.
Yeah, depending on the paint, you know, the way the paint is, you know. Okay, cool. All right. Yeah, so they're saying the volume is still low but better than zero. So yeah, maybe you just don't touch just in case.
I'll try not to mess it up any further.
Luckily I can hear you. Okay. So then another thing that is going to actually get into my next segment here that I'm going to ask you about. So, you know, I'm working on that Zuda, and I was coloring the sort of the top of the missile or the part of the thruster on the backpack, and it's like a bronze sort of, or like an orangey metallic. And so I used the it's like a metallic bronze from the Ray Studios mark, but it wasn't the right color. And so for like $4 plus shipping, I found in the brand Dispay. Okay.
I'm sure chat's got the correct answer.
Yeah. You know, hey, learning new words all the time. Anyway, this is an orange metallic that I think is going to be perfect for that because I do want to do the Zuda right. And as cool as that metallic bronze looked and I could have just went with, I kind of want it to be more true to.
Yeah. You know. It's got to be that burnt orange, which, you know, funny story. I think the first time I ever saw that exact color that you're holding was on a trip to California. The rental car that I got was like a burnt orange Mitsubishi Eclipse.
That's a cool color. That reminds me of playing Midnight Club and having an orange 300. Wasn't it like Price is 300 or something? Yeah.
That's why I was never a car guy, because I was a video game guy, and it's like I could have all my dream cars in a video game, right?
That's exactly right. Okay, I forgot about in my notes what I wanted to bring up. So for those of you yesterday that stayed for the rest of the Steven show, if you didn't watch it, check it out, especially near the end. Something happens and I have to leave, And I felt bad because it was like really abrupt. Not only did I have to leave at the end of the show off some, but then I couldn't really talk to you for like a little bit. And
I mean, it made it like the fact that you made it until like right at the end of the show, it was almost perfect. So
I know. And so how it happened was it's raining and it was raining really bad last night, like so bad where I can hear like drops into water, standing water, like, okay, there's something, you know, it's, and then like, yeah, near the end of the show, I just kind of look and I can just see this little stream coming down from the back door here. And I'm like, oh great, here it is. And yeah, so I was like, I gotta go. And then, you know, my wife was prepared. She had all these, it's the pet pads. They're pretty much diapers. Yeah. Those like things chunks. Are a lifesaver. And so, yeah, we grabbed a bunch, threw them all on the ground. And what I ended up just doing was going in the backyard and pulling up, you know, it's fake grass that we have that kind of goes up to the cement. And it just, it makes a barrier. So then the water will then just go a little higher. Anyway, I just pulled that up and back all the way down to the gate so that the water can just kind of, yeah. So it stopped water from coming in the rest of the night. Cause we did fill, we did block the bottom of the sliding doors here with cement and just completely cemented it just to stop water from coming in. But I think it was just so much yesterday. It's weird how it happens like that in Texas. Like it might not rain a lot, but when it does, it can rain like a whole lot. So
it's almost like you're suggesting that when it rains, it pours.
Dude, I'm telling you, because then also we had to take our car to get fixed. We had to get a tow truck because the battery died, even though we just got it repaired. And the guy called and said, they don't know what's wrong yet. The battery's just draining. And then not only that, okay, earlier when my wife was walking the dogs, another dog came out and attacked them.
Are you kidding?
And the bigger dog got a little injury, but nothing serious, but she took her to the vet anyway. So
dang, I'm sorry, man. That's tough.
Yeah, so when it rains, it floods and it pours it. But
is she going to be okay?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Luckily it's all good. It's just crazy that happened. And it was funny because it was happening. She was outside walking and I was talking with the tow guy. And I guess she was like yelling for help and didn't even hear. And I guess a neighbor came out. But yeah, that's...
I mean, it can be scary how quick that stuff happens. I mean, you guys know like... You know, shoot, I was attacked by a dog.
That's right. Yeah.
I had a friend of mine told me that they had like, you know, a little 4-month-old beagle that got attacked by a pit bull. And he ended up having to shoot the pit bull because it wouldn't let go. It was just like.
That stuff is just sad. I tell you, as much as animals are cool, the whole pet culture thing is kind of sad for me. Just
because it is. Yeah.
You know, yeah.
It's a responsibility. Thing. A lot of people.
That's the thing. That's what it is. It's a responsibility. Crazy. So anyway, I felt like I had to make that clear of what happened at the end of your show yesterday. Because I like usually near the end is when we get into our spicy hot takes and and then, you know, the drop off.
Well, you know, I felt like yesterday, you know, it was almost all hot takes, right? Because like, you know, even I think the first comment of the night was like, wow, it's kind of weak of you guys to start bashing a show that hasn't come out yet.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, technically it has come out, at least it premiered. But
yeah, no,
it's what we do here. We kind of,
yeah, no, it was fun. It was fun. So no, I'm glad. I'm glad everything's cool enough here for me to be able to stream again. And then just to talk about some other things related, I meant to do a stream this past weekend where I was going to announce the winner of the giveaway of the Zaku, Gundam Universe. And I didn't do that. So that will happen this weekend. So just, yeah, keep an eye out. For this weekend when I do my stream, I have the plans for my stream is some work on the Zuda and maybe some work on the Kiryu. Start with that. And then Zuda? I'm trying to think
the Kiryu, like,
yeah,
is that the same one that Hideo Kojima built?
Oh, you know what? I don't know.
I'm sure he posted on Twitter that he has that same kit.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah, I don't know. Because the stuff he's into sometimes it's cool how it has that crossover.
Oh yeah.
You know, but not that I want to get into this, but I found this video about Hideo Kojima about like how as soon as he got to work with Hollywood, he just pushed everyone else away, and I didn't realize how obvious it was. But
oh yeah, he's a there's a term for the kind of person that he is. It starts with star and rhymes with trucker. But yeah, honestly, a lot of people talk about like his relationship with David Hayter, the voice actor for Solid Snake. But I think, you know, who really got shafted the worst in that whole thing was the localizer who wrote the English script of Metal Gear Solid 1.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was hearing about in it. Yeah. Because it's interesting how a lot of what became part of Metal Gear Solid lore was what the English translator was coming up with to make it how, what could we call these things to have it make sense? So the guy was having to make sense of the story and then come up with these things. And then Hideo Kojima liked some of it. And then he was like, let's go by this. But then,
And that guy was working for like 6 months without pay. Like,
wow. Okay. So I don't know all the details, but that's a very fascinating story. And it's sad because it's not like I'm really trying to call out Hideo Kojima, but it's fascinating how this all, you know.
Well, and you take the good with the bad, right? Like, there's the story of like Hideo Kojima and his relationship with his father and how every Metal Gear Solid entry is almost like a him chasing the demon of his father and trying to it's like a personal therapy for him because his father didn't actually serve in the military, but was very, but was like a military enthusiast. And so he had his kids doing like Navy routines in the morning and things like that. Like, which is kind of, it's kind of weird, right?
Yeah, it is.
So he had a very sort of challenged upbringing, and then he lost his father at a young age. And so, you know, if you go back through like the Metal Gear Solid lineage, you get this like story of like trying to kill your father's legacy. And it's, you know, Solid Snake kills Big Boss and Liquid Snake is trying to become Big Boss. Like there's this like patricide element to it. It's very cool.
Yeah, that is interesting. And it's like on some angles of this, it's like he's wanting to work with these Hollywood stars because that's kind of in his DNA of his creativity, where it's kind of like a Hollywood sort of focus to it. And it's that, so that's more driven by his creative drive than I think by some like personal gain.
So then here, I'm going to challenge you. I'll push back on you a little bit here. Okay. That's what we do. We challenge each other.
Yeah. Go for it.
So the way I envision it, imagine you got to direct a movie, because I know that you're passionate about storytelling and you've always wanted to direct a film.
Yeah.
And you got this fantastic actor that nailed the role. But then for the sequel, Bruce Campbell says, "Hey, I'll come back and play that role for you. I'll come out of retirement and play it." Would you keep the guy that got you there, or would you go with Bruce Campbell knowing that the character you wrote was inspired by Bruce?
I'd keep it. I'd keep the guy. I've come around to understanding Bruce Campbell can't do everything. No, I think it's once I saw
Sam Raimi things.
Once I saw the Ash vs. Evil Dead TV show, how they played into his age, and it's
it was a little much.
It's like, okay. I get it. Like, he's not the, because I think that's what worked with Bruce Campbell, like Jim Carrey, was that physicality they brought with their acting. You know, it was kind of on the humorous side, but they were also very physical. And I think that helps when you're acting, when you're being physical.
Yeah. And there's this trend that seems to be popularized where when they're bringing back legacy characters, they typically will try to poke fun at that character. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But it's like you think about like Bill and Ted Face the Music, right?
Yeah.
They almost like humiliated Bill and Ted in that movie. Same way with Ash vs. the Evil Dead. Like the series was almost like he wasn't groovy anymore. He was like, let's make fun of the old guy that can't keep up.
You know, I feel like that's a literary device, almost like the hero's journey. But when a story or universe has sequential media and series or movies, at some point it starts referencing itself in almost, and in sometimes it works well, sometimes it doesn't. An immediate example is Gremlins 2, you know, where it just plays off of that immediately, but yeah. It worked because really what else are you going to do? But there's things like that show Burn Notice that Bruce Campbell's in that as it was going, it would start, it started getting a formula, but then later it tried to then play against the formula, but then what it did was it tried to use the formula to tell the most ridiculous plot lines, stuff that you would complain about in, like, or The Acolyte, for instance, where it's like, okay, this character was here, and then they had to go do something somewhere else completely and showed up right on time for that. But it's like they were doing that on purpose to be schlocky, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, man, shoot, when I was in college, there was definitely a story that I wrote at one point, and one of the other students in that workshop was like, dude, I wanted to like it, but the problem is, you know, everything that was happening in it was so convenient and so writery. Like, of course this character was going to be there at that time because they have to be in order for the story to make sense. And I was like, well, yeah, but isn't every story like a series of contrivances like that? You have to have it, you know? Well,
you know what? I even thought of it because I used to think that too. And then it came around to be like, well, the story is being told because it is such an incredible journey. You know, like when it's like, yeah. Well, of course this is going to happen. What a coincidence. Like, well, that's why the story's being told.
That's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
But to your point, I think that like when it gets telegraphed too much, like in Burn Notice, then you start kind of like,
it's, you know, you see that with sitcoms a lot of times, and sometimes it works, especially when you're only able to catch it for 30 minutes once a week.
I think, you know? that's what helps.
Yeah. Like, cause you get the familiar feeling, you don't mind that it's the same thing. Yeah. That's pretty interesting. I'm trying to think if there's another, but not anyway. Yeah. Let's see here.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say I might move on, because what I'm trying to do is see if there's any other cool fluff that we can come up with. but we're almost 30 minutes in. I think we've touched on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say if all else fails, you can always bring up whatever Twitter beef I got into this week.
You told me about that. That's funny. Yeah, it was, I guess it was something that could be lore. It was something about like the Methus being with the suit instead of the Sazabi.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'm not even sure where this artwork came from. I couldn't find anything about it, but I've seen it circulating a few times, and some people say it's like, oh, it's from like a PS1 game. I can't confirm that because I don't know. But yeah, you know, the suggestion was, oh, well, they were going to use Methus. Like Neo Zeon was going to use Methus instead of Gyarados. And I was like, there's no reference to where the art's from, no reference to who drew it, just, hey, here's a theory. And then like, you know me, I'm like, that's how misinformation spreads. Cause it's like a game of telephone, right?
Because you could say, like, okay, there was a time where there was some Methus used as support for the Sazabi, or, you know, but to go further with the lore and expand on it, be like, oh, what the context here is, this was originally, that's where sometimes, I hate it because it's like, you're not really just, you're not trying to tell that person you're wrong for the sake of it. It's almost like, well, let's make sure, like you said, misinformation isn't actually going
because it would be just as easy. Like if you were just trying to share a piece of cool art, which in its defense, it is a piece of cool art.
Yeah.
Then you would say like, hey, does anyone know who drew this and what it's from?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
that's what the caption should be.
Yeah.
But when you put something else in there, then it kind of seems like you're stirring the pot a little bit.
Yeah, and sometimes, yeah, I don't know how much it's that, or maybe someone is happy that they might have, you know, come across a tidbit that or fact that not many might know, and that's where it's like an innocent sort of lore,
yeah.
lore fabrication.
I mean, shoot, it happened to us not long ago. I remember one of our friends was super excited because we thought we were finally getting the high grade goof from Requiem for Vengeance.
Oh, because there yeah,
was really professional looking photos of a custom.
I know that actually looked burned. Good. I was like, wow, they're actually doing it. But actually, I'm glad you brought that up because it actually is a good segue in a way. In a way, it's a good roundabout way. No, it's this update that came out, or an update about an update that will be coming out to Gundam Breaker 4. And why I said this is a good segue is you brought out Requiem for Vengeance. They're going to have the Gundam EX from Requiem for Vengeance in Gundam Breaker 4. So obvious, should have been there like when the Netflix show came out. But at least this is a way to not only maybe extend the life of the game, but also get people to then go watch the show that missed it. It's Gundam EX and, you know, the GQX, they're labeling it that. You know, they're not changing the name at all for the English region, unless they just haven't really figured that out, or they're really going to stick with that. But
so as I understand it, it's kind of an inside joke, right? The ZGAX, because like the name is ZGAX, but the way that it's pronounced in Japanese and then phonetically how it is spelled becomes GGAX. Like,
yeah, exactly. Or it has to do with something that I'm not familiar with in programming or something. It's interesting. But so when it comes to Gundam Breaker 4, I think it's pretty cool that they're doing this because I actually did not think, and it was just the other day that I was thinking, which I don't do too well, but I do it every once in a while, and I was like, why is there not a Gundam EX or Zaku 2 in Gundam Breaker 4? And so I'm glad they did it, but, you know, and I'm thinking right now because, you know, I've been playing. I haven't played this week, but I'm just trying to grind to level up. And it's one of those things where, man, it would just take forever if I went and got this suit and then had to go level it up. For what reason? That's where it gets to the gameplay.
Where's the game?
It's like, well, I already had to play all the levels just to grind to get max level. So it would just be to play, just to play. You know, it's it would be neat if there was this kind of grind to completion ratio where you could grind to max level a suit with still maybe, you know, 3/4 of the game to play, which it kind of works that way since there's quests, which are really just the whole game again. But you kind of see where I'm getting at, you know.
Dude, maybe if they just had like a ticket system, kind of like what you can do in, you can do sort of in GBO 2 where you trade in your tickets and like you can rearrange things. You can do it in RPGs all the time where it's like, oh, I want to restat my character late game.
Yeah.
And it's like, I want to take all my points out of this and put it into this. I think that Gundam Breaker 4 is a perfect place where it's like, okay, I started with these 5 mobile suits. So of course those are the ones that I've leveled up to maximum. Can't I pay some arbitrary amount of tokens in order to de-level those and level up a new one that I want to use? But that defeats the purpose of what they're trying to do, which is to get you to play more, is they want you to be grinding because, you know,
and, at the end of the day, they can say, like,
we have this many active users.
Yeah, and I think there's a mechanic where you can do that. Yeah, Altronimus is saying it, but I'm curious, do you lose the part when you do that? Because I know you can, like, merge parts or something, you know. Didn't I make a video? Shouldn't I know? But I think there's something where, yeah, you can take the level of another part and exchange it. But
you can do some parts boosting,
Okay. Yeah, because I would like to jump in again with these. Just a way to play these in video game form. Especially for the GQX, that's a quick turnover, you know.
It is.
Because, you know, the other thing I'm just thinking too is because it's UC, but it's alternate UC. Would that even be in Gundam Battle Operation 2? Would GBO2 even touch that?
I think they might add it eventually.
Yeah, I would think so, especially with the other mobile suits that
just want them to get those surface type Zakus in there so that we can start skating around.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. So yeah, that's really cool. I, you know, and from a just a video gamer's perspective, I do think this is the right way that any game right now should be coming out with content regularly. I mean, they should probably be dropping a bit more, but I, you know, it's almost like this game has almost been released in an old school manner, marketing yeah. and all, you know.
And that's one thing that's always been great about Bandai is free updates. You know, like they're not big on paid DLC, especially, well, you know, at least not for Gundam games. You know, it's all at least, yeah, I mean, back in the PS3 days, like the DLC for, you know, 0081, that was paid. But like, you know, you're getting free mobile suits in every drop of GBO2 every week. You're getting free updates to GB4 with new mobile suits that you can unlock. So,
yeah, that they do sort of break that up pretty good. Because I forget what game it is. And I don't know if it's Gundam Versus or another game, but I was looking at the DLC and it was like $4.99 for each mobile suit. And I was like,
oh, yeah, that was Versus, I think.
It was, and I was like, oh, man, I'd want to do this, but I don't know about that. It's like I'd have to have dedicated and beat with the other suits first.
And they also didn't have like packs. So it's like if you had like a pack where it was like, okay, you can pay $4.99 for each of these mobile suits or you can get all of them for $10.
That you know what? Cool. It was like that with Street Fighter VI. So I got the battle pass that has Terry Bogard and Mai Shiranu. I don't know how to say her last name. And some other characters. And the battle pass, or whatever it's called, season pass from Street Fighter, it was on sale. So it was like a no-brainer. If you buy the whole thing that has everything, it's cheaper. But then it was on sale, and I was like, okay, perfect. Because I'm not crazy about the cost of all these battle passes and stuff. Like, there's a lot of games that, like, you look at what they have, and it's like, okay, am I being pulled into a trap? You know, because that's what I want to think. Like, am I not going to get my full fulfillment out of the game because I need to spend money on things? You know.
Yeah, I think I saw a tweet not long ago that someone pointed out that the problem, like the biggest problem in modern gaming right now, is that if you buy something on day one, you're going to pay at least $70, if not upwards of $100. The game's going to be incomplete because there's going to be tons of content that was cut before it was released. It's going to be buggy, and you're just not going to have as good an experience. But then if you wait 6 to 10 months, you're going to pay $40 because it's going to be on clearance. All of the bugs have been patched. All of the content has been added. So it's like, in what world should the early adopters be punished for paying full price for a product when the people who come later
get
a better experience?
No, excellent point. Because I think I'm the type of gamer that I'm buying games the day they come out or playing them the day they come out, like Game Pass or whatever. And I also know that usually over time games get better. There's a lot of times where I'll discover a game later and it's been out for a couple years and it's the complete version and it has all the patches. And it's like, okay, this is actually a good experience. And about the early adopters, it's pretty interesting because I'm on the fence with the way what do you call it? Oh, you know, the games that come out early, but they're not
early access.
Early access. Yeah. Thank you. That's so simple.
Because you've been sampling a lot of games early access, right? Yeah.
And it's like, okay, this seems fun, but like, how much different is it going to be? Might I start getting tired of it by the time they change it enough to where I don't care anymore? You know, and then you have, okay, what degree of early access is this? Oh, it's already done and it releases in a month, or oh, they don't know, but it could be over a year. Right. So it's like I don't know, you know, what I want to do.
And it would be cool if publishers would reward their early adopters. So for the people that do play early access or the people that do buy day one, is there a way to grandfather them into getting the DLC for free? That way, when people come back and play later and they maybe get the game at a discounted rate, they end up having to pay $10, $15 for the DLC, but the people who bought it on day one get the DLC for free.
You know what? It's a good point because some games do that. Like the Starship Troopers Extermination was cheaper. I think it was 20 when it was in early access. Now it's like 40, I think, price. So not many examples, but that's a good way to do it. But, you know, coming back to Gundam Breaker 4, Alan Mitchell has said something interesting. He's just wish Gundam Breaker had the same or similar weekly updates like GBO2 has. So interesting point, only because you can consider how many, if you consider how many mobile suits would be possible in a game like Gundam Breaker, you could make it where a new suit comes out every week, just have the same monetary system. I am sure there's going to be whales. I mean, I would think that would be a better success for Gundam Breaker if they went that route.
Maybe, maybe not. I think that Gundam Breaker and GBO2 are very different in their gameplay styles.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, Gundam Breaker, you're playing for parts. You're not playing for the entire suit. Whereas mm-hmm. in GBO2, each suit has unique attributes that are specific to like that suit. So each suit kind of has their own play style because you're having to adjust to like, oh, is this like a ranged raid attacker? You know, or is it like the ag gen where you can just boost roll into everybody? Like, that's such a unique attribute. How do you recreate something like that in Gundam Breaker? Like, do you attach it to the part? Like, okay, so if you
it would be a builder part. Yeah. You'd probably come out with like a specific builder part just for that. And the other thing I'm thinking, though, is how much of people that play Gundam, even GBO2, like the suits and want to collect the suits. Even if they don't play it too much, you know, it's exactly. It's the maybe just do the daily challenges, but then, you know, the weekly roll, you know, refreshes. Let's see what I could get, especially something with Gundam Breaker 4. Because let's say you then get a new, let's say the Gundam EX and the G-Quacks are like the banner suits that you can get that week. And you happen not to get them, but you get some other ones that you were wanting. You know, like that type of feeling, like, oh, I could pay more and maybe this time I'd get it. Like, I feel like that would be so easy to do. And they haven't done it. But then I guess we're thinking purely for making money. But then why haven't they done it?
Well, I mean, to your point, it's like, why would they do it if there's not a monetary incentive behind it? And, you know, I hate going to that, like that idea, but like, at the end of the day, there does have to be a monetary incentive to it because, you know, Bandai is not doing it for the fans. You know, it is fan service, I guess you can argue that. But like, you know, they got to keep the lights on, too, just like the rest of us. So, that's where these conversations are important because, you know, we as fans have to decide what type of monetization strategies we're comfortable with, what we're willing to pay for, if we're going to support a product, if we're going to support the franchise that we love, what are we willing to spend money on? Because then if we can tell Bandai that, then they're going to deliver it for us. You know, they've shown that they are very receptive to fan feedback.
Yeah. And do you think when it comes to Gundam video games, fan reception has been fair?
Fair to whom?
good point. But I do think it actually has, because when you hear about people talk about, like, for instance, SD Gundam Battle Alliance, people usually don't really complain about the game itself, except that it's SD.
Yeah,
you know, which is interesting because it's like, well, this is saying that the game must be good for those that play it, but I guess the visuals. We've talked about this, like video game design, like wanting to make a Castlevania-like game, but then making it look too much like Castlevania, where then it's just going to get lost. You know. I guess making things SD could be a way to make it look unique, but I think people that want mecha action want something that looks like a mech, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, every game is a holistic collection of choices. You know, it's the gameplay, it's the music, it's the visual direction. You know, do we want something? You could have the same reaction even if it weren't SD. What if it were cel shaded instead of like realistic textures? That was the huge backlash to the Wind Waker when that came out.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's a good point too. And I wonder how much that affects something. Okay. Well, yeah. Let's move on then to this other part here. This is the 10 coolest Gundam Grunt Mobile Suits. So this is what is the coolest. Ooh. I know what's cool is different to everybody, you know?
I see a lot of Zeon there, so I'm already happy.
Yeah, I'm curious, because again, what is cool? Cool to kill or cool to use, you know? Okay, so number 10 is the Leo. What are your thoughts?
Big fan of the Leo. Yeah.
When it comes to cool mobile suits, do you think that would be lower than 10 or higher than 10? Lower than 10.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on where we're going with it, right? Like, I think 10 would be the minimum. I think it could only go up, right?
Well, I'm curious what, like, because maybe it's because I don't know Wing too much. Like, are Leos considered cool? Like, Nazi soldiers are cool to fight? Or are they...
Well, I guess one thing that's really cool about the Leo is that, you know, you literally see that it is tall geese, but like... At its core, a Leo, unlike any other, well, for the most part, unlike any other mobile suits where it's like the big bad is just like a more badass version of the grunt suit. That's where you've got it. Like the tall geese is just a more badass version of the Leo. So there's kind of that like, hey, Junior.
And I think it does a good job of making the Leo look kind of like just a standard bland, sort of realistic tall geese being this crazy, you know, design. So, okay. Yeah. Okay. Number 9, Zaku 2 is the most iconic grunt mobile suit. So if it is the most iconic,
but it's not the coolest.
Yeah. So I'm really curious to see what they say the coolest is, but it is true when they talk about it being iconic and it being a top grunt suit for a lot of reasons. You know, when I got into Gundam, I really started with the first, even though I was trying the other ones, I was like, okay, I'm going to start from 0079. I thought the Zakus looked horrible. But by the end, it's like, well, this is a good bad guy suit, and it kind of grows on you. It's sort of a menacing, ugly-looking suit, you know?
Yeah. It's asymmetrical, which is unsettling. Like, just if you go to, like, psychology, right, you know, we always rate people's attractiveness based on how symmetrical their faces are. So the fact that the main bad guy mobile suit is asymmetrical is it's a design choice. And I talk about Kunio Okawara's design choices all the time, and like the fact that this was the one that he had the most creative liberty on, it was like, oh, of course it's the most iconic. So I'm surprised that it's not the coolest.
We'll see. Okay, Dom 3. I mean, that's pretty freaking cool.
That is a cool one. It looks a lot like the Dryzen to me.
Yeah, it does. I like that look. I like that. Okay. Spaded One McDysentery. Yeah, that is the 185 Spider-Man from Mafex. I just got it in the mail today, actually. I'm going to do a head swap with a custom Spider-Man head from some dude. It looks more like the 90 cartoon. And cool. I think it fits that well, but yeah. So moving down. Okay, Union Flag mobile suits from Gundam 00. These are actually pretty cool. And I know you don't know too much about 00, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with 00, but I am familiar with the Union Flag because there is a builder on Twitter that actually made a fully automated transformable Union Flag.
Oh, dang. Okay, yeah, that's pretty cool.
And I have asked him like 6 times, what motors are you using? Because I need to install them in my Zeta, and he won't respond to me. So,
dang. This is a cool, and this makes me want to revisit this design because it does a lot that I like when it comes to mobile suit designs, because it does have that sort of Zeta Wave Rider-y look, but it also has a very unique GM kind of head, you know. A lot of cool stuff going on there. All right, number 6, the GM is the Earth Federation version of the Zaku, which is true.
How are you going to rate the GM higher than the Zaku? That's just...
Well, I think that's... Okay, that's a place where we disagree then, because I think the GM is cooler than the Zaku.
Okay, so this is a good point of contention, because obviously, you know, they don't really specify in the article, but would you consider the, when they say Zaku 2 is number 9 and GM is number 6, do you think that they mean just the bog standard stock version, or do they mean the family of
I think it should just be that stock standard version, because there are so many badass GMs that, because
if we were going to talk about the whole family of GMs, you know, the Spartan, the Striker, like there is a ton of cool GMs,
then that would win. Don't you think the GM would just be number one? But I mean, there are the Zaku 2 variants.
I was going to say there's a lot of cool Zaku 2s too, but I think that there's more variety among the GMs. Zaku 2s, they all pretty much follow the same form factor, whereas the GMs, there's wild variants, right? Like I think the GM ground type is way cooler looking than the standard GM.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's a good example right there. I was just thinking about that with my last video I did with the GMs, because I was like, that ground one just looks...
Yeah, if you guys haven't watched it.
Yeah.
It's more realistic. The ground one just looks great.
So that's... I'm curious if we go down then through the rest of this, if we're going to see other Zakus or GMs listed, and that might, you know, tell us something.
Change our minds.
Okay, Zagok. I mean, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Gun Cannon. Okay.
Is that a grunt suit?
Yeah, because there wasn't that many, right?
Yeah,
or was there?
Kind of like a limited production type deal.
Yeah. Is that more of like a specialized suit?
I would consider it. I mean, they do have a mass production model, but.
Yeah. Yeah, this list is, I don't know. Okay. The Death Army. Okay. I do think this is cool, because when I came across this, I was like, okay, this is insane.
I do love that their mono eyes are like actual eyes.
Yeah, I know. Like it's funny when to think back at G Gundam, because I feel like it did what we were just talking about, what storytelling does, you know, where it then starts to kind of play with itself and make fun of itself. And I feel like G Gundam was that, but doing it in a very interesting and unique way, instead of just completely making fun of itself.
Yeah, they had a lot of fun with the typical Gundam formula and got away from it. And yeah.
All right. Gun Tank. Wow, a lot of 1 year war, which not bad, but there's so many that
we need a clear definition of what grunt means.
Yeah, we'll go back to the top and look. And then what? Wodom. Is this person just trying to be cool? They're like, here's a bunch of stuff from the 1 year war, and then turn A. Like, yeah, you're cool.
This has hipster written all over it, right?
I know. Like, I didn't even know about this. It's a walking dome.
Yeah, the Wodom is I mean, they're cool.
Wow. Wow. That's and that's one I need to finish. Well, not as technically powerful as you're gonna. Most grunt mass produced mobile suits are perfect for bolstering armies. Yeah, it's not really saying. It's just saying grunt and mass produced. Yeah. Okay, well, we went through that list, which I thought was very anticlimactic, but I think it worked well for being a narrative of this author, you know, being a anime snob, a Gundam anime snob. No, I'm joking. I mean, because if we want to talk about grunt suits, like I feel like the GM is where I would pull from all day.
Yeah, and I mean, I would almost, instead of doing it, you know, in this fashion where it's just kind of random selection, I would take the grunt suit, like the chief grunt suit from each faction of each series, and put them up against each other.
Oh,
so you know, you'd have GMs, you'd have like the Zaku Warriors from Seed, you'd have the Wyndham, like. The Wyndham from Seed is
freaking awesome. Oh, yeah, that one's awesome. Yeah, see, that's a good grunt suit. Okay, well then, let me ask you then, from 0079, it's the GM and the Zaku 2. Those are like probably the two main grunts head-to-head. When we got to Zeta, and this is something I brought up before, what are the two main ones? Now, we know that the Federation and AUG have GM 2s.
So because they both have GM2s, I would almost consider the Nemo the grunt suit for the AU and the Hyzac for
okay. The so that's how Titans. Okay. So what about the Titans?
Oh, I was thinking Hyzac.
Okay, Hyzac as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So that's interesting. Okay. So what about Neo Zeon?
Ooh, like Char's Neo Zeon or Haman's Neo Zeon?
Haman's.
Ooh, wouldn't that be the Gaza Sea?
Yeah, okay.
Or would it be the Zaku 3?
Okay, yeah, maybe, depending on the era or what's going on. But yeah, those two.
Or
okay.
if you're Glemmy, it's Kublai's.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. which is cool. Okay. So double Zeta. I guess, would you say the Zaku 3?
Yeah, I guess so. Like,
okay. Yeah. And then when we get to, what is it? There's a few more thrown in there. Unicorn.
Well, so interesting point about both Double Zeta and what I would say like Wing is that there really isn't a good guy grunt suit because at that point you have the Gundam team. So, you know, you've got Judo and Beecha and Rue. And then same with Gundam Wing, where it's like the closest thing you have to a good guy grunt suit is the Maguanaut Corps from Catra's people. But like, is that really the good guy grunt suit? I think by the end of the series, you could argue that it was the Taurus because when Noin and Sally Poe start amassing forces for the Peacecraft Nation, they start using those white Taurus suits. But like, there really isn't a grunt suit that the Gundam pilots have with them.
Okay, so then what I need to do is look up certain battles that took place in Double Zeta to see if there's any information on the type of units that got deployed.
I don't remember seeing any Nemos. And
That's very interesting. I've never really thought about that. Okay, so going to Unicorn, they have is it the Rizels? Which I don't know if those count, but I know they're kind of produced in larger numbers. They had more of those Zeta type badass suits during that time period.
Which, man, it bugs me to high heck that the Rizel is considered a Zeta type when it's more like the Methus than the Zeta.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, you explained that to me before.
they both have like the crotch hook.
yeah, that's you know, actually, I breezed over Char's counterattack. That's kind of funny.
Jagans.
Jagans, Giradogas. Are those the... Okay. Because that, I think, even though I complain about the movie Char's counterattack, I do like those grunt mobile suits.
I think that was like... I mean, if you take the GM and the Zaku 2 to their, like, ultimate iteration, the Jagan and the Giradoga, that's them. You know?
Exactly. Yeah, because it retains that kind of classic look, but just beefed up. And you know what? It's funny because I wonder what kind of hand in design Anno had in Char's counterattack. That might be somewhere. I might have to look that up. Okay. So, yeah, even in Unicorn, we had the sleeves. But they had the same things, right? They had the Giradogas, just the sleeve.
Well, they had the Girazulu.
Oh, that's right, Girazulu. Yeah,
a little slimmer. Kind of looking like Jinro and the Wolf Brigade.
Okay, yeah. Okay, thank you. Yeah, that's where the sleeves come in. So, you know what? That is what I would really like to make as a video of, like, going through of, like, here are the main, you know, suits of... Because I feel like I talk about that stuff a lot, but I haven't really coalesced it into like a informative data packet, I guess.
Well, and we talk about it all the time where like one of the coolest things that Bandai could do would be to make entry grades of all of those grunt suits.
Oh, yes.
An entry grade GM, an entry grade Zaku 2, entry grade Giradoga, entry grade Jagan.
Yeah, even if they had to sell them for $20 and it came with two.
That's a... I like that idea.
I mean, it would be so great to do. And, you know, Hasbro was doing that with the Star Wars Vintage Collection, where they would sell, and it's just in a cardboard box. It's not even in the normal box with the plastic, but it's like four, no, even more than four. It could be like six, five or six of like the army builders. They did the Hoth, they did Stormtroopers.
Or they can just go crazy like they did with the Mogonaut Corps and make like a 36 set.
Yeah, see, that's crazy.
That's a bit much.
Yeah, that is. But I can see if you're really into that. Like, when it comes to the 3.75 inch Star Wars figures, I have maybe 20 Stormtroopers, which might not seem like a lot. And then there's like the different sculpts as they went, you know.
You know what you ought to do with those?
Huh.
Is you ought to build one of those infinite mirror boxes.
Oh,
I see. Where if you create the light source, it looks like there's just like infinite of them. And so then you can like have just a couple of them in like formation. And
yeah.
Then
dude, that is a really good idea, actually. Yeah, I really like that. So I want to end it with this real quick. Name one or more projects that you're either working on or you need to work on with intention, but also name the why and how that benefits you. So I'll start to say it's that Zuda, I need to finish it because I think I'm going to learn a lot more about masking because I'm going to mask it, do the commander colors and paint it. And I'm really, and so the reason I need to do that is because I want to use that technique that I don't use much, masking, actually painting the parts that way. And then the other one is the Kiryu MFS3, and the reason is, well, because it's a Mecha Godzilla kit that's badass, but I do want to see what it is like to paint something metallic, like to make it where that is its true intent and not just the plastic is made to look like it. Because it's always scary. I see the Hayakushikis. That's why I don't really have a lot of those. Because it's like, I don't know what gold I want it in. Or how I should do it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and even me, like, I want to go back and redo my Hayakushiki. Because even though I'm happy with the color of it, because I painted it on the runners, I didn't remove the seam lines. Those are still there. So it's like, now with the nice thing about that is that there's really only two parts where that matters, is like on the shoulders and the wings, because like all of the chest parts, they're surrounded by other colors. So it doesn't really affect it. I definitely want to go back and fix that.
Yeah. So yeah, for you, I know there's a few things you've been working on. Anything you want to throw out there in the universe that you need to do and finish and why?
So there's three that come to mind. The first one, and shout out to Xeonic Shadow because, you know, one of them is relevant to him is getting the Ilfrith pre-production type lighting set up.
Oh yeah.
One of those, you know, working with those NeoPixels and building that out and then enabling the Bluetooth control so that then I can, you know, say, hey, permit score 8 and change the lighting from orange to blue, I think it's going to be a very cool project. It's just been a challenge to figure out, like, how am I going to get the lights placed in the right place on the breastplate? And so where I've arrived with that is I created a mold where I cast the chest plate in resin. And what I'm going to do is pot the LEDs in the resin so that they're in a fixed location when I go and install it. The second one is the V8 and Mercurius Although I did get the NeoPixels working on that, they're not fully painted and customized yet. Once they are, then that's going to lead to, I'm going to use those same techniques when building out the Zeta Plus Hummingbird because I'm going to be able to control the, control the lights in the boosters, the lights in the mono eye, you know, the lights that are going to be installed all over the kit. So the V8 and Mercurius are very much like the testing ground for that.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. Well, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wanted to bring this up because I feel like me getting the Kiryu and having been working on the Zuda, that reminded me of, I hate it when I move on. you know, and then it's like, oh, I really should finish this. And it's like, maybe I do need to say, Adam, you need to at least finish this. Because I even had that Master Grade GM that I got from Art Rovo Gundam, and I haven't even finished it because then something else comes and I have to build it. I mean, I think there's always those kits that, yes, you will move everything aside for. But then when you don't have that thing, it's like, okay, let's put a plan in motion and come up with a why.
Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, really articulate it.
Well, cool. Well, hey, all that was a lot of fun. Yeah, glad we could hang out again, talk Gundam gaming always. And all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Always. So.
Check out, there's a podcast version available for this if you prefer that. Check the links in the description for Steven and the other supporters that are at that level, have their links down there. Check out Art Rovo Gundam, supporter of this channel. Until next time, have a good weekend all. See ya.
Cheers.